I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, you know by now that the far-left organization No Hate in Washington State is trying to take opportunities away from girls and trying to bankrupt my business. So I was shocked to see that a friend showed up at one of their fundraisers. Plus, libertarians take their Pride Month message a little bit too far. And the very simple reason Seattle Socialist Mayor will never be able to solve the homeless crisis. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. You can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I was so angry, I almost forgot my signature line to start the show. I feel a sense of betrayal today, and quite honestly, this is something I've been stewing on for a few days. As you know, we were gone over the weekend. We didn't have a show Monday or Tuesday. This is something I found out that had happened over the weekend, and I've had nothing but time to sit and reflect on it, and I thought it would make me less angry over time, but it hasn't. It's actually made me a little more upset. So by now, you are familiar with the group No Hate in Washington State. It is the political action committee that has formed to oppose the two Let's Go Washington initiatives. Here they are holding a sign at an event I was at saying that they would see me at the Nuremberg trials, fascist effer, as if it's totally normal and appropriate to say that people who disagree with you politically should be hanged for those political beliefs. So that those are the kind of people who support No Hate in Washington State, and they're far-left extremism extends way beyond their behavior at events like that. You know, I think that this is an extremist organization, because if you look at the American populace, there are very few issues that are 80-20 issues, and I believe it's an extremist opinion to want to force girls to have to compete against boys and share spaces with boys, and it is absolutely an extremist opinion to believe that parents don't have a right to know what's going on with their kids at public schools. So No Hate in Washington State represents the fringe minority, a small fringe of voters even in Washington State and across the United States of America. And then this organization is taking things further. They're very upset that I've used my platform to try to advocate in favor of the two initiatives to protect girls' sports and parental rights. So No Hate in Washington State was part of a left-wing cabal that is behind the current efforts to bankrupt my business and ruin my reputation. You'll recall a couple weeks ago, there was this big press conference under the guise of Washingtonians for Ethical Government, which is just a shell organization for a far-left group of lunatics like No Hate in Washington State, that filed a public disclosure commission complaint against me and Let's Go Washington, saying I've unfairly used my platform to influence public opinion to the tune of $1.25 million by using my voice and my First Amendment rights to support the initiatives that I choose to support. They say, no, Brandi can't have First Amendment rights anymore. There's a price attached to her speech, and therefore those are in-kind contributions. So suffice it to say, while I am still very much in the fight and excited for the fight, No Hate in Washington State has been a thorn in my side. And more than that, they've, you know, cost me money, which is fine. Again, we're in the fight. We're in the fight to win the fight. But when you try every single avenue, try to get people to show up and protest me. And we know what can happen at protests. You got people there saying I deserved, and others who believe what I believe deserve to be hanged for our political beliefs. They're broadcasting my location. I really believe the goal is for someone to hurt me or kill me. You know, No Hate in Washington State is sending people out to harass signature gatherers, to try to stop people from exercising their constitutional rights. Behind the scenes, they're lying. They're lying to the public about what these initiatives will and will not do. And then they're engaged in lawfare, can't shut me up. So they're trying to take me down by any means necessary. Now, I have expressed over the last couple weeks some disappointment in some individuals who have aligned themselves with No Hate in Washington State. For instance, last week, Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck went to a No Hate in Washington State fundraiser. I have to say, I was very surprised by it. Denny Heck has a long track record of being a moderate, of working across the aisle. I voted for him for Lieutenant Governor in part because he's been very firm on the First Amendment. Amendment issues, and he made sure that me and other independent journalists could get access to cover the state Senate, which he is the president of. And so to see him align with an organization that's called No Hate in Washington State and is, you know, basically characterizing these young girls as hateful, who just want fair competition, I really felt like it was beneath him. You know, another person who's supported No Hate in Washington State is Congressman Adam Smith. And that bothers me because I really don't, and I've tried to ask him this, I can't believe that he would support boys playing against girls. I don't know if he's just in a really tough congressional race against a socialist and he feels like he needs to do these things, but that was another disappointment to me. But again, you know, he's a Democrat, so maybe they're just falling in line. And then there's the individuals who it doesn't surprise me at all. Like, I'm not disappointed in them because it doesn't surprise me. For instance, there's a No Hate in Washington State campaign launch that's happening on June 17th, and two of the headliners are Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal and King County Executive Girmay Zahalai. That doesn't surprise me. That doesn't bother me. Those are the kind of people who I expect will support an entity like No Hate in Washington State and even support the tactics of that entity because they're, you know, much further to the left. We've still reached out to them to ask, just to be clear, you know, what would you say to these young girls who just want fair competition? Are you calling them hateful? Is that what you're suggesting by aligning yourself with this organization? So, you know, I'm keeping track, right? I'm keeping a list of names, right? For lack of a better phrase, of people who are aligning themselves with what really is an extremist organization. But at the end of the day, you know, I can't say, like, I never expected some of those Democrats to support No Hate in Washington State, if not for anything else, than just for their political survival. But here's what really floored me. Look at this picture from a fundraiser for No Hate in Washington State in Olympia last Thursday. Do you recognize the person on the left? Thurston County Sheriff Derek Sanders. Proudly smiling, No Hate in Washington State fundraiser. That's the one Denny Heck was at, by the way. So at first I got a text about this. Hey, did you know that Thurston County Sheriff Derek Sanders, who, by the way, I consider a friend. I consider Sheriff Derek Sanders a friend of the show. He's been on the show many times. I have, you know, supported a lot of the work he's done on the public safety front, but that's why it cuts so deep. It's personal, but it's also bigger than just my personal gripe about him attending a No Hate in Washington State fundraiser. Again, I got a text message about it saying, hey, did you know Derek Sanders attended this No Hate in Washington State fundraiser? I was like, no, he didn't. There was no fiber of my being that believed that to be true until they sent me the pictures. And it was like a knife to the heart. Again, personally, but just from a broader perspective. First of all, let it be clear, friends don't get preferential treatment on this show. And I've gone through this before. You know, I have great relationships with a lot of politicians and people in public service, but that doesn't mean they get special treatment. I remember one time a Republican state lawmaker, I criticized a bill that he supported, and he's like, well, I thought, you know, we were friends. And it's like, yeah, we are, but that doesn't mean you get special treatment. My duty is first and foremost to the public. My duty is first and foremost to tell the truth. And as long as I'm doing that in good faith and telling the truth, well, you know, that just comes with the territory. And I should quit my show if I can't call out people who I support politically when they do something that I think is inexcusable or wrong. So you don't get preferential treatment on this show. And you know, I talked to Derek Sanders over the weekend. We had an exchange that I guess I would consider off the record because it was more like me to you. But I did reach out to him in an official way, saying, I need a statement on this because we're going to talk about it on the show on Thursday. But, you know, the personal betrayal part of it that I feel, again, you have a law enforcement official who, you know, has been sane on public safety issues, who I would consider I'm mostly politically aligned with, a friend, going to a political fundraiser to oppose two very common sense initiatives and to support an entity that has attacked me personally, that has attacked my business, that has made it unsafe for people to collect signatures, that has made it unsafe for some of these teenage girls who are advocating for themselves to hold events to speak without armed security guards. And you're going to a fundraiser for an organization that did all that. There's no excuse for it. There's no excuse for it. But then more broadly, I'm thinking, how can someone like Sheriff Derek Sanders oppose these two initiatives? Align himself with an extremist organization like No Hate in Washington State? It makes no sense. So the gist of his response to me is, oh, I'm not supporting No Hate in Washington State. I'm not taking a position on the initiatives. I was just there to listen. So let me read the statement he provided me in full, and we'll discuss on the back end, okay? He said, as the sheriff of Thurston County, I represent a diverse community and regularly attend events across the political spectrum to meet new people and learn about those I'm sworn to protect. I do not take positions on issues that aren't directly tied to law enforcement, but that doesn't mean I won't show up and listen so I can broaden my perspective. To effectively police your community, you must first know it, all of it, not just the parts you are already familiar with. The first step in that process is showing up and listening, especially in spaces where law enforcement isn't typically present. I have people I love and respect that are on the opposite sides of this issue. If showing up to listen and gain perspective without taking a formal stance either direction is off the table, we are truly beyond saving. Here's the problem I have with that statement. I have never criticized, you know, Sheriff Sanders or any other elected sheriff for attending a run-of-the-mill community event. He does. He's right. He attends events put on by both political parties. He was just a couple days after this at a Republican Party event. And he's gone to Democratic Party events. That's not the same thing. This is a specifically an event where the only goal is to raise money for No Hate in Washington State, an organization that paints the people who support him as bigot, hateful extremists. It's not the same. It's not just, oh, a community event. I'm showing up to listen. You could, if you want to support people who are LGBTQ plus and you want to be seen as a sheriff supportive of all your community, that's fine. It's June. You know how many pride events there will be in the month of June in the city of Olympia? You could throw a rock in any direction and hit a door that's hosting a pride event in downtown Olympia. You don't have to go to this one. And it's a specifically a fundraiser. So your presence there, whether you intended it to be or not, your presence there smiling, taking photographs with people with a No Hate in Washington State sign behind you gives the impression that you support everything they're doing. You support their mission to defeat the two initiatives, to keep boys and girls sports, to keep secrets from parents, to harass me, to harass signature gatherers, to make it unsafe for these teenage girls to go and share their voice, and to bankrupt my business. It just is. It's totally not the same. So, and I appreciate Sheriff Sanders has tried hard, I think, to, you know, keep a foot in both sides of the political aisle. And I do believe to a certain extent that sheriffs, you know, I don't think they have to be apolitical, but you serve everyone. You're elected to serve an entire population of people, some of which you might disagree with politically. So I have no issue with him going to all sorts of community events. This isn't a community event. It's a political fundraiser for a very specific purpose. And if, you know, you're going to, in one of the things he says, you know, people criticize him for going to Republican things as well. Maybe you just don't go to political events then. If it's become such an issue, maybe you just don't go if it's a political event. And you're so concerned about what other side, the other side might think at any given time, just don't go to political events anymore. Because I'm sorry, you being there in uniform, taking pictures with a No Hate in Washington State sign behind you, tells the public that you support what they're doing. It lends credibility to them. To an extremist organization with extremist mafia tactics, contributing to the violation of people's constitutional rights, contributing to young girls feeling unsafe at school and on the court and in the locker room, contributing to parents who have no clue what's going on with their kids at school. There's just no excuse for it. And I reached out, I thought of Frances Stout immediately, because Frances Stout, Derek Sanders is her sheriff. He runs the sheriff department in her community. She's a Tumwater High School senior who's been a big player in trying to get the initiatives across the finish line and has spoken out for herself about, you know, wanting fair play. She sent me a text just a little bit ago in response to Sheriff Sanders going to this No Hate in Washington State event. I'm going to read part of it. She says, as a 16-year-old girl, I've worked hard to speak up for what I believe is fairness in girls' sports. Instead of feeling supported, I've often felt let down by the adults and institutions that are supposed to protect and guide students. What is especially difficult is seeing public officials associate with organizations whose statements and actions have contributed to a climate of hostility toward people who share my views. As a young woman, I want to know that my voice matters too. I want to be heard, treated with respect, and allowed to participate in public discussions without fear of retaliation, intimidation, and violence against me and my family. It is especially disappointing to see the sheriff of my county attending an event with known supporters of hate and crime in my city. At 16, I know that aligning himself with a group of this sort of with this sort of beliefs is wrong, and his judgment in doing so should be questioned. And for the record, you know, I think once this happened and the Denny Heck thing happened, I came to the realization I don't like speaking in absolutes, okay? I try not to speak in absolutes because I don't think it's particularly productive. But I am absolutely sure I can't support people who aren't explicitly on the record supporting the protection of girls and women. I'm absolutely sure of that. That is an absolute I will speak in. I can't support any political candidate. I can't vote for any political candidate. I can't do an event with any political candidate or politician who is not on the record saying that they believe in parental rights and they are going to fight against the erasure of women and girls. This is the women's rights issue of a generation. And I don't think there's any room to be wishy-washy about it. Certainly no room to align yourselves with people who hate women and girls, people who paint individuals as bigot extremists who are trying to protect women and girls. And so, you know, I regret my vote for Denny Heck, even though, you know, I agree with him on other things. This just has to be one of those absolute issues that I just can't abide by. And the sad reality is, you know, Sheriff Sanders, he is the better choice in the current campaign for sheriff. The guy running against him is too far to the left on public safety issues. Thankfully, I don't have to make that difficult decision because I don't live in Thurston County. So you really just have two candidates who neither of them support, at least if I'm led to believe. I don't think you can say you support women and girls if you go to a No Hate in Washington State event. I just don't think that you can. So it's a tough thing because it's like, well, you know, he's the better candidate for public safety, which is the issue at play. But this is a very bothersome thing to me. I'm personally hurt by it. I'm hurt for people like Francis Stout, that you have people who are semi-sane lending credence to No Hate in Washington State, a lying, scheming, extremist organization. Personally hurt by it, and I'm hurt for the state. Because this is the moment where we need to put a foot down, we need to draw a line in the sand and say, we're not doing this anymore. We're not going to pretend, we don't want to offend groups of people, so we've got to try to, you know, make everyone happy. We're not doing that anymore. We're not doing it anymore. So you're either on the right side of history or you're not. And to be clear, I still consider Sheriff Sanders a friend. I am hurt by this. I've expressed that to him personally. And I can't just on this show, I can't put my friend cap before my show cap because I have a responsibility to all of you. And so I can't be on this show criticizing Democrats like Denny Heck and Congressman Smith and Congresswoman Jayapal and Girmay Zahalai for aligning themselves with No Hate in Washington State and then just sweeping under the rug the fact that Sheriff Sanders went there too. Can't do it. Won't do it. So here's where we are. All right. It is Pride Month, of course. We'll have a ton of stories. We should do a little Pride Month stinger like today on Pride Month. I'll work on it. Something like that. So another kind of ally of mine is the Libertarian Party of Washington State. I've spoken at their events before. I have a lot of libertarian tendencies, but sometimes I just think they take the whole freedom thing too far. And yes, I guess, you know, is there any way to take freedom too far? Well, let me show you what I mean. So they posted a series of graphics for Pride Month. Here's a couple of them. The Second Amendment isn't a group right, it's my right. And it has a individual with a pride flag as a something, I don't know. And it said, love a cape, thank you. Love freely and defend fiercely. Self-defense is a human right. And it's got a picture of a handgun with the rainbow behind it. Now, in and of itself, if you just left it at that, fine. Yes, every single person in the United States of America, if they're legally able to own a firearm, should be able to use the firearm in self-defense. I don't think LGBTQ plus 2IA questioning plus minus people should be excluded from that. In fact, I criticized Pierce County Sheriff Keith Swank for his post on X, you know, questioning whether transgender people should be allowed to own firearms. So I agree with that on its face, but it's the text that went along with it that really has me questioning what exactly they mean. So it says, no backing down this June. We stand for LGBTQ people and the right to self-defense. Okay, and it says, this month, we're focusing on LGBTQ rights and Second Amendment rights because minorities have always needed protection from the majority, from the mob, and from the government. Who is the mob in this scenario? It says, liberty means nothing if it only applies when you are popular, accepted, or easy to understand. The whole point of rights is to protect people when society decides they are inconvenient, controversial, or different. LGBTQ people deserve to live openly without being targeted by the state. Minorities deserve the ability to protect themselves when the system fails them, and every person deserves the same basic freedom to live, speak, organize, defend themselves, and be left alone. Rights are not up for a vote. They are not favors from politicians. They are not privileges handed out by whichever party is in power. In June, we are not watering it down, no backing down. First of all, so when you say that they should be able, they have a right to self-defense when you are not just when you're popular, accepted, or easy to understand. The whole point of rights is to protect people when society decides they are inconvenient, controversial, or different. I take this to mean that they should be able to shoot someone if you won't let them in a girl's bathroom. If I take all of that, it's the first thing I thought. So should they be able, because the rights, remember, they think they have a right, a human right, to compete against girls if they're biological boys, to go into girls' spaces, into women's spaces, they believe, and in the state of Washington, that is, quote unquote, their right. So are you saying if someone stands in the way of that right, they need to use their gun to defend their rights? That is absolutely insane. Absolutely insane, especially in the climate that we're in right now, where you've got, I'm sorry, transgender people who are using an awful lot of violence and vitriol to try to force themselves into women's spaces. So I reached out to the Libertarian Party of Washington for comment. As I said, I've had a great relationship with them in the past. I have not gotten a response yet. So when I do, I will let you know. But they're getting some criticism in the comments, and they're really standing their ground, so to speak. So I'm just not sure if this is the kind of messaging that is helpful at this moment in time. All right, coming up next, I think the Attorney General watched our show yesterday. What do you think, Nicole? We'll discuss first. If you're thinking about moving out of the state of Washington, or maybe just to a different house, upgrading, downgrading, downsizing, upsizing, downsizing, yeah, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sell with, the only reason I say this is because sometimes downsizing is upgrading. You know, you just don't need a bigger home.
Sure.
So you're downsizing, but it's an upgrade for you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So our friend Lon Westover, who is an undivided viewer and listener, he reached out to Wes when he went to sell his home in Washington State so he could move to Arizona. And he said Wes made his home look fantastic before listing.
And they stage it in such a way that it's so inviting, super inviting. You're looking at the pictures going, huh, how come I never think about putting my out like that? You got to do some things that just spice the place up so people look at it and go, wow, this is something.
I like that. Wow. He was very excited. So, and he said he gave Wes a little pushback with some of the cosmetic stuff that Wes said we need to do. And he was like, in hindsight, I'm so glad we listened to Wes. So go to sellwithwes.com, see some of the listings that Wes has been able to sell for his clients. And the very first thing I think you should do, reach out to Wes for a market analysis. It's a weird market right now. There's a lot of homes for sale, but not as many buyers coming into the state because, you know, people are fleeing. So you really need to make sure that you get a head start if you're looking to sell your home, and Wes can help you out. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. One quick, I'm going to mention this throughout the show a little bit. We didn't have a show Monday, Tuesday, so guess what? Special just for you. We're having a Friday show tomorrow. So we're going to have a regular show at noon tomorrow. We'll be here because we left you hanging Monday and Tuesday. So just wanted to let you know, don't be surprised by that. So we did a segment yesterday on the frustration that for 10 initiatives in a row that were Let's Go Washington initiatives, so, you know, conservatives, so to speak, behind them, initiative signature gatherers have been harassed, even assaulted, vilified, all of these things. And I pointed out that, look, if the shoe was on the other foot, and for 10 initiatives in a row, 6 years in a row, right-wing extremists had been out assaulting, thwarting signature gatherers, harassing them, screaming at them, throwing things at them, defacing their signature gathering sheets, it never would have been allowed to continue. the AG and the governor, they would have been out there first, the first instance of it. And they would have had a big old press conference to defend the state constitution and the constitutional right of people to petition their government for a redress of grievances via the initiative and referendum process. But they've been so quiet. And it's because it's their people doing it. It's the Democrats doing it. And they don't support the initiative. So it's just sort of this placid, you know, allowance of it beyond a couple posts on X. I think last year, Bob Ferguson posted something during the harassment. The Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs, he's been a little more proactive trying to push some bills to increase protections for signature gatherers. And then Attorney General Nick Brown has done a couple posts on X. So I criticize them for not having a press conference, for not, I don't know, trying to look into the organizations that are sending people out there to harass signature gatherers. A few hours after our show, Nick Brown posted this, or his office did. Washington state law protects your right to organize and gather signatures free from threats, coercion, or violence. If you think you may have been the victim of a crime related to signature gathering, contact your local authorities. And then they also put out this know your rights as a signature gatherer talking about, it says in public places like sidewalks, it's public places like sidewalks and city parks, signature gatherers generally do not need a permit to collect signatures or distribute literature. So they're letting people know, like, hey, it's unlawful to destroy, attempt to destroy completed voter registration forms. These people have a right to do this and to be there, so don't harass them. And look, better than nothing, but still not enough. I think they probably posted that again because of our show yesterday and because there have been some more instances of harassment and screaming and intimidation and defacing of signature forms. I would like to see you come out and have a press conference. And you know what I think a really nice thing would be, if you really mean it? You have a press conference with Brian Haywood of Let's Go Washington. You have a press conference and you say, hey, you can even say, I don't agree with these initiatives or whatever it is, but this has to stop. It's been 6 years. It's been 10 initiatives. These people have a constitutional right to do what they're doing. Then I'll believe you. Then I'll believe that you really, really mean it. On that front, the state still can't regulate my speech. So I'm going to be doing another super signing event with Let's Go Washington this Saturday. So it's going to be outside in the parking lot of the Pursuit Church in Snohomish, Washington. So I'll be there 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And if you have sheets, by the way, that are already filled out, you can drop them off. So that's a good place to drop off if you don't want to mail it back in. So I'm just going to keep poking the bear. The left doesn't want me to use my voice to support the Let's Go Washington initiative. So what am I going to do? Use my voice to support the Let's Go Washington initiatives. You got to love it. So I hope to see you. Yeah, even if you already signed the thing, come hang out. Why not? Maybe it'll be a nice day. Snohomish is great.
I don't think it's supposed to be very nice, but
Nicole, why are you crapping on my parade?
I love the Snohomish stores. Oh, you can go in the store. It doesn't have to be nice outside. You can go in the store.
Yes, they have so many great stores and places to eat. So come hang out in Snohomish this Saturday. It'll be fun. All right. Should parents be responsible for their the behavior of their juvenile delinquents? The Richland City Council is considering this right now. This is from our friends at the Center Square. Richland Council eyes criminal charges for parents who allow their kids to ride e-motos. Okay. First of all, I had to look up what an e-moto was. It's like e-bikes, yeah. Which I have an e-bike. Are the kids out there causing problems with their e-bikes? Apparently in Richland, it's become a thing.
You know what? Actually, I was playing softball the other day and these two kids were revving, going around our field, revving to like distract us, right? So yes, they are causing
terrorists.
Trouble.
So apparently this has become quite an ordeal. I mean, it goes beyond that, but it says parents could face criminal charges in Richland for allowing their children to ride illegal electric bikes and e-motorcycles under a proposal considered by the city council. If approved, the ordinance would create a new misdemeanor offense for, quote, failure to supervise a child. Police Chief Martin Pilcher proposed the ordinance in response to growing concerns among community members about repeated juvenile conduct, creating quality of life issues, particularly involving e-bikes. Now, okay, quality of life issues. I think it would have to be kind of narrowly tailored, right? But generally speaking, I mean, there are already certain kind of things that you can get in trouble for as a parent if your child does it. I believe, like, if your child is drinking or something, or you got them alcohol, or they got access to your whatever it is.
And they bring a gun to school.
Yes, I believe that you can get in trouble for that. But generally speaking, I struggle with it only because, like, we want kids out of the house, right? We want kids out of the house, off their phones and their tablets, out playing. Like, this is what we want, right? You sure. want to kick them out, so then go out, but then has your parenting been good enough where they won't go out and cause havoc in the community? And what do you do if it mm-hmm. does? So I asked subscribers in our daily subscriber show poll, would you support a misdemeanor charge for failure to supervise a child if your child is arrested of some sort of quality of life crime? So I have to imagine that this would be like vandalism, graffiti, mm-hmm. you know, riding their e-bike in a way that's illegal. Harassing the elderly, stealing from a lemonade stand. I'm not done yet. I'm just kidding. Okay, go ahead.
Well, all of those are a little hard to control because we are, you know, we are free people, mm-hmm, all mm-hmm. of our own autonomy, right? But in this case, an e-bike, that's something that you're, I mean, the parents are probably helping provide a child. So it's not, I mean, if they stole an e-bike, I don't know. But I, assuming the parents know that they have an e-bike, it is a vehicle. It's a vehicle now. Mm-hmm. And so you can drive it on the road. You can keep up with traffic.
But I think it depends on the age, right? Because in this article, it says that it's illegal e-bikes. So there has to be.
It's illegal or illegal?
Which, it says illegal e-bikes.
Yeah, I think that, well, gosh, I kind of took that as to mean illegally driving them because they're not of age on the road.
That's what I mean. Yeah, right. I think that might be what it
so
is.
That's what I think is, like, if you're going to give your kid something that has rules, laws surrounding it, then you better supervise them. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm for that. But
I would say yes on the third instance. Because I think even a reasonable parent can have a kid that's a troublemaker.
Right.
So it happens once, I don't think you go after the parent for that. Happens twice, it's like, are going to be charged next time.
Three strikes,
you're out for a parent, and then you get this charge. That's what I would support. Most of you say yes, around 65% over on Locals. Cap Tom says, showing my age, but in my youth, some youthful misdeed might get you a ride home in a police car or a chat with the policeman. With one's parents. For me, it was a learning experience that did not need repeating. In other words, yes, I think some parental involvement is beneficial. Yeah, and I think for most parents, your kid gets brought home in a cop car, your kid's going to be grounded. They're going to have much tighter restrictions.
Right.
And again, it's not going to happen again. But I think there's definitely an issue with juvenile crime among certain communities where there's no supervision happening. And they're out, like the kids down in Thurston County who stole like 12 cars and were arrested like 12 times. That's a parental issue.
I think it should be a tool in the toolbox.
Yeah. CND Voss says, I say no, but it's a fine line. Who makes the decision on where the line is? That's the problem. For kids being kids, absolutely not. For vandalism, damaging property, the parents should have to make it right, and the youth should face some sort of consequence. Again, who makes those decisions? Very slippery slope, as I firmly believe that morality cannot be legislated. Yeah, I mean, when a kid, you know, is convicted of vandalism or something, there's usually a fee where you have to pay restitution, and I imagine the parents are either paying that and they're making their kid pay it. Angry Archer. No, we're not communist China. Punish the child perpetrators. So we'll see. We'll see what happens in Richland. All right, coming up next, Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson sitting down for an in-depth interview with my former colleague Hannah Kim, and there's definitely some gems in there that we want to talk about. First, summer means a laundry list of exterior projects in your home, so if you've got just a lot going on, let Valentine Roofing take a few things off your plate. So maybe that means exterior cleaning, cleaning your gutter, new roof, new siding, etc. You owe it to your summer and your free valuable time to give Valentine Roofing a call. Plus, right now, qualified homeowners can take advantage of $0 down, 0% financing with 6 months deferred interest when paid in full within the promotional period. So financing subject to credit approval, by the way. Call 206 Roofing. Schedule a free estimate today. That's 206 Roofing. And remember, when you see that red Valentine van, you know you're in good hands. I trust them with my home. You can too. 206 Roofing for a free estimate. 206 Roofing. All right. Oh, man. Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson is in over her head. Let's talk about it as if we didn't know that in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, there's an organization in Seattle called City Club, and they host something called Civic Cocktail, where they let people buy tickets and come in, and they'll have, you know, politicians or community leaders, and they'll be interviewed. I used to be part of it when I was at Fox 13, because they have journalists come in and do it, and they broadcast it. So this particular event that happened yesterday, headliner was Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson, and she was interviewed by Hannah Kim of Fox 13, and Hannah covered all the important stuff. And I haven't seen Katie Wilson do an awful lot of in-depth interviews because she doesn't have a lot of depth, and so it's probably not a great idea for her. But in this setting, I don't know if she maybe thought it would be kind of a friendly thing because it's City Club and Civic Cocktail. But then when you put a good journalist in there to do it, that can be the difference. I mean, you could have put some other journalists in there to do this interview, and it would have gone much better, I think, for Katie Wilson. But Hannah Kim is a very, very good journalist. So first she asked Mayor Wilson about Spencer Pratt, the LA mayoral candidate, saying, I'm going to crack down on this homeless drug use issue in LA, and all the homeless people are going to end up going to Seattle.
Do you have a response? Because he specifically brought you up. I think it's only fair that maybe you want to respond to that.
Well, I'm not going to respond to him, but I will respond to you all. You know, I think it's very clear when we look at the data, when we look at different cities around the country and kind of compare the scale of our homelessness issues, what is driving homelessness is housing costs.
No.
There is a very, very clear correlation between housing costs and homelessness. And that does not mean that drugs are not a factor. They absolutely are a factor, right? And especially people who have been homeless for a while, right, and struggling with substance use disorder, helping someone out of homeless is not as simple as putting a roof over their head. And that is why, as we're doing our shelter acceleration, we are being incredibly intentional about pairing shelter with services, with case management, with drug treatment, with behavioral health services, with all of the support that someone might need to get onto a better path. But it is very clear, again, that housing costs are what are driving the homelessness crisis, and drugs make everything worse. And, you know, if you fall into homelessness, very often people become addicted to drugs once they become homeless. There are a lot of reasons for that. Or if they have, a light substance use disorder, that becomes a severe substance use disorder. So drugs are very entangled with the homelessness crisis, but the real driver is housing costs.
Gosh, that is just... You can't solve a problem that you refuse to properly identify. And as long as she believes that the main driver is housing prices, it's unreal. There was a study done by some professor at UW. Remember, he was really mad at my coverage of it, so he wouldn't come on the show and talk about it, where he said that the areas with the worst homeless crisis, the data shows it's where the housing costs are the highest. Yeah, because these things are linked together, but not in the way that they're suggesting. So these areas like LA, Seattle, Portland, housing costs are really high. Why? Well, you have liberal politicians that have overregulated and have done a lot of things to make it really, really expensive to live here. And those are the same politicians who make decisions that make homeless crises and drug crises worse. So the two things aren't connected, except for the political class that has created the problems. It's the same political class. So she's never going to be able to fix it because she won't identify it. And Hannah was pointing out to her that, look, you know, you say that you understand that, you know, just a roof over someone's head won't fix the issue, and that you're really focused on getting people help for their addiction issues. But as Hannah had pointed out, you know, these problems under Mayor Wilson, they're not getting any better. And she brought up 12th and Jackson, and Mayor Wilson sort of tried to dodge the question. Hannah brought her back to reality.
That area has gotten worse.
Oh, yeah.
Under
I'm
your
aware.
Watch. I've seen it.
We're working on a plan.
That really quick?
Well, that's not, there's nothing really quick about that answer.
Yeah.
But what I will say is that I do think, what I do support is we can't have that, right? And so establishing like really clear guidelines for our public space, right? And being willing to enforce those. But being willing to enforce those doesn't mean that we think that just arresting everyone and putting them into jail is going to like solve anyone's problems.
What are you even talking about? So what is the other plan? And you say, we can't have that. We've had that. The whole time you've been in office, we've had that. The whole time Mayor Bruce Harrell has been in office, we had that. So at what point do you make a plan? You're saying arresting isn't the answer. So, okay, if it's not arrest, what is it? You just go there and say, hey, will you guys please leave? You know, the only thing they do right now, every day at 1 p.m., they come in with these city trucks and they spray. They use a, what do you call it when it's a really... hard spray of water.
Oh, a pressure washer?
Pressure washer. They come in, they pressure wash the sidewalks 1 p.m. every day. And then the people leave for a little bit and then they just come back. That's like all the city of Seattle is doing. She has no solutions. Hannah also asked her, you know, about some of the fallout over her comments about Starbucks, like, you know, protesting Starbucks a couple days after she won the mayoral race and telling people that they shouldn't drink Starbucks and she wouldn't either.
Let's start with Starbucks. Do you still support a boycott of Starbucks?
You know, I had the pleasure of visiting the Pike Place Market Starbucks a little while ago, and I ordered a, I think it was a blueberry muffin latte. That was like a staff creation. So
that's
I guess I broke my boycott.
Okay.
Yeah, but I, you know, I don't know. What do you want me to say about that?
So you don't, you support them?
I absolutely support unions, and I support
workers.
So that
question from the crowd,
I mean, what in the world is that? Typical socialist, though. Oh, don't drink Starbucks. Then she's like, I ordered a blueberry latte staff creation. It was just absolutely insane. It's like back when the Occupy movement was happening in Seattle and there was all these anti-capitalism riots. And there was the guy, the famous image of him breaking a window at the Nike store that used to be in downtown Seattle. And he was wearing Nike shoes. It's perfect. It's perfect. She was also asked, of course, about her highly criticized comments about telling millionaires goodbye.
Today, do you still feel the narrative of the rich leaving is still overblown?
So I still think that claims of a large exodus of rich people due to our statewide millionaire tax that the legislature passed this year are overblown. I do believe that.
Yeah, and that's just, what is the number, I guess? Where is it? When does it become an exodus? Who gets to decide that? And does she even know how many people are leaving? It's wild. One more. So the camera thing, the crime camera thing, she continues to get a lot of pressure over that. The city has a bunch of crime cameras. She won't turn some of them on. Like, she won't turn them on by the stadiums ahead of the World Cup because of what? Concerns about ICE or whatever it is. So Hannah asked if she's, because there's two council members now basically saying if something happens and there's a terror attack, there's blood on your hands. So Hannah asked her about that.
If there is a credible threat, we can turn those cameras on.
But how do you know if there's a credible threat? Right. What if it happens and then you don't catch it?
So, you know, this again, we're kind of balancing competing priorities here, right?
No,
concerns around data security and potential abuse of data versus the utility of the cameras in solving crime. And, you know, to be clear, in general, my read of the situation is that cameras are generally helpful in solving crime, less so in general in preventing or deterring crime. We get that information, which is something that happens, then we can turn those cameras on, and that's what we're doing. Yeah.
And do what? I mean, we're really balancing two priorities. The data privacy concerns that the far left has brought up, and I'm not saying data privacy isn't a concern, and you know, a terror attack and finding a potential terrorist. And also, the city controls those cameras. You're the mayor. You control the police department. So certainly, if you want to put restrictions into place and how that data is used and stored, that's completely within your purview to be able to do. So the data issues are really what the city makes of it. It's absolutely outrageous. So good job to Hannah Kim. And we didn't even pull some of the best parts, but she was great and really went after Katie Wilson where she needed to. So check that out. All right. Coming up next in National, I told a stupid little story about Scott Pelley and me meeting him 16 years ago. And the internet loves it or hates it. It was really weird to see it take off. So I'll discuss that. First, a whole bunch of you had taken the First Mark Challenge and become First Mark Challenge victory stories. And that's because no matter what the outcome of the First Mark Challenge is for you, it's a victory. Because let's say you got your insurance, right? We all need our insurance. And you're looking to maybe save a little money. And you take the First Mark Challenge. You call them. You talk to them about your insurance needs. They go out, shop the market of carriers. And if they come back and say, actually, you have great insurance and we can't even beat the price. Well, then you leave with the presence of mind knowing, and the peace of mind rather, knowing that you have the best possible insurance at the best price that you can get. Or you'll be like, Robin, Debbie, Connie, all who've taken the First Mark Challenge and are saving hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year, and you can't beat their customer service. When you call them, they pick up the phone and it's not some phone tree in India. It is someone right here in your community, one of your neighbors and fellow Washingtonians. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, can we do the Scott Pelley thing first? Mm-hmm. Then I'll get to this Christopher Rufo story. So this was like a really stupid post I made. Not stupid, but So Scott Pelley was fired as the from 60 Minutes and from CBS News because apparently he was in a meeting and publicly criticized Barry Weiss, the new editor-in-chief at CBS, and the new guy that Barry Weiss has selected to lead 60 Minutes. And so he was like a pompous jerk in front of other employees, and they fired him, as any employer in America would, right? But when I read that story about what happened in this meeting, it reminded me of a memory from 16 years ago when I was a wee little intern at CBS News in New York. So I posted about it because I thought it really was relevant to the pompous jerk sort of persona that was being put out about him. I said, I was an intern at CBS News when Pelley would fill in for Katie Couric on the evening news. I watched in the control room one day as he directed them to slowly push the shot in on him as he took his glasses off. It was so fake, I've remembered it for 15 years. So I was, and just to be clear, I was an interview at CBS, or I was an intern at CBSNews.com. You can come off that, Nicole. I was an intern at CBSNews.com, not with the CBS Evening News. And this was the summer of 2010. So it was actually right at the tail end of Katie Couric being the anchor of the CBS Evening News and Scott Pelley taking over in 2011. And he was filling in quite a bit. But I wasn't around him every day. They did these little kind of informational sessions for interns, and they'd send us notes about what you could attend. For instance, one day, Katie Couric came and talked to the whole group of interns, which I thought was pretty cool because I was a big Katie Couric fan. And then this particular one was to go tour the CBS Evening News set. And as part of it, they like brought us back into the control room where all the magic happens, right? And I just, it's one of the only things I remember about this internship 16 years ago, is standing there and they're in this commercial and Scott Pelley's telling the directors, right? When we come back, I want you to slowly push in on me and I'm going to take my glasses off and I'm going to kind of look up. And it's like, and I was like, and then there's a couple guys in the control room who just looked at each other like with this knowing look, like, what an idiot. And I'm just thinking there, that was the fakest thing. I remember it so vividly. It's been 16 years, but I was like, that's so fake. And I've, you know, went on to work in TV news for 10 years and anchors are all a little bit of a diva. I was a little bit of a diva, a lot of a diva when I worked in TV news, probably right now as well. And you all have your little things like, oh, I want to be shot in a certain way or cropped in a certain way. But I never in all the years that followed saw somebody like use glasses as a prop and tell the director how they wanted the camera to come in on them as they move their glasses down. So I shared this story and it just took off. And I learned that there's a Scott Pelley's Glasses Facebook, Scott Pelley's Eyeglasses. It's the first time I'm learning that it's not just me that 16 years ago noticed this weird thing with his glasses. It's like a prop for him. He takes them on, he takes them off, he puts them in his mouth, he waves them around. He even had them on like the set of the late night show. And he's just like, he uses it to seem smart. I'm not even convinced they're real glasses. And it was extra funny because I get this email from the editor of the Daily Wire opinion page. And they're like, can you write us a story about your experience with Scott Pelley? And I'm like, I guess it's kind of funny, but it's so weird that it took off. And so I wrote a little article for the Daily Wire. I didn't pick the headline. I don't like the headline. It says, Scott Pelley's glasses were a prop for a man play acting as an anchor. I watched it. I don't think he was, he was an anchor on the news and he did some fantastic journalism earlier on in his career before he went full-blown TDS. It's just one observation from 16 years ago. And apparently a lot of people have observed this about his eyeglasses ever since. But then I was getting like texts from, I got a text this morning from Deseret News. Oh, I was just wondering if you could give me some more insight about what it was like to work with Scott Pelley. I'm like, I literally met him that one time. I have no other insights about the man. It was just a story about his spectacles and he created a spectacle with them often. So
very, very it's just weird. Serious newsman.
Very serious newsman. Yeah, just was totally fake and phony. Yeah, and then he got TDS in his later years, as many people in the media did. All right, typical blue state going after and trying to discredit conservative journalists. So Christopher Rufo has been doing a tremendous job exposing some of the waste, fraud, and abuse in government in California. You know, we talked about the sex change procedures that they're giving to homeless illegal aliens. He worked on that story with Jonathan Cho. Talked about, you know, giving free solar panels to illegal aliens, etc. Well, apparently he's doing such a good job that Governor Gavin Newsom is, does this sound familiar? He's trying to discredit him. So Christopher Rufo came out and he said, congratulations to Steve Hilton and Spencer Pratt. America loves underdogs and they're both going to fight like hell until November. I hope they win. Talking about the governor's race and the mayoral race. So Gavin Newsom's office said, PSA, the man often described by right-wing media as a journalist just endorsed two Republican candidates for office. Christopher Rufo writes opinion pieces for a MAGA think tank and has repeatedly pushed false and misleading claims in service of that agenda. He is not a journalist. He is a paid political operative with a social media account. Does that not sound word for word what the Washington State Democrats are saying about me? Word for, he's a paid political operative with a social media account. It's so funny because I always go back to the founding of the country and who the journalists and the free press they were protecting at the time were. These were people giving their opinion, very strong opinions against the British monarchy. That's why they felt like because they were saying things the government wouldn't like, they needed extra protections. They needed protections, and it's the very First Amendment to the Constitution. The protections for a free press were for people like Christopher Rufo. They were for people like me. They were for people who are overtly critical of government so that they could continue to do that. Like, I still think all the other media needs First Amendment protections as well. But like, for what? You know, the Seattle Times, they have nothing to worry about. The Democrats are never going to come after them because they're in the pocket of the Democrats and they don't criticize the Democrats. So it's just outrageous. But the playbook is the same. The playbook is the same, regardless of what blue state you're in. And to be fair, I've been consistent. President Trump has gone too far with freedom of the press issues as well, and I've called him out every single time. All right, it is Thursday. That's when we check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
So we forgot to talk about this. We've been talking about the World Cup coming to Seattle and all the challenges that we're facing here ahead of that starting pretty soon. Miami's also a host city for the World Cup.
We are probably the best host city in America for the World Cup.
I'm not even going to argue with you. You probably are. But I haven't heard all these rumblings about how it's not going to be safe or the homeless people will be everywhere or they're not prepared for terrorist attacks. So are there any concerns about the World Cup in Miami?
I think there's the general concerns of ICE and the cost of traveling to Miami. But the biggest and the most frequent concern I've read about and heard is the heat, the weather, like the heat in Miami, because they're hosting it at an open air stadium where the Dolphins play. And I have sat through a Dolphins game and it is brutal if you happen to be on the side of the stadium that the sun is blaring in on. So they're worried about the heat, not crime.
Yeah, geez, isn't that nice? But also, you can't do anything about that. In theory, we could do something about the issues that are going to plague Seattle for the World Cup. We just choose not to. But unless they want to put a big blocker on the sun in Miami. But I can understand that because in the summer in Miami, that's miserable. I would never go to Miami in the summer. No offense. But yeah, playing soccer there and sitting in the hot sun. So you know what? No city is perfect.
No city is perfect. We are hosting some of the bigger games. Like we have a semifinal here and the bronze final is here in Miami. So we'll be hosting people for quite a while during the games.
Cool. Love it. All right. Florida's attorney general is filing a lawsuit against OpenAI and CEO Sam Altman. And this is tied to a couple things, but in part, they argue that OpenAI helped to influence a school shooter.
Yeah, not just that, but also we had a case where a kid used ChatGPT to coach him to basically talked him into killing himself. So the lawsuit is basically accusing these, AI softwares of not having safety protocols in place to either alert authorities or to stop those conversations from happening as they're happening.
I mean, that seems like an obvious. AI is so smart. You're telling me that they can't detect if somebody wants to take their own life or wants to commit a shooting? Here is the attorney general of the state of Florida talking about what they're trying to accomplish with this suit.
At the end of the day, we're seeing people commit suicide after extensive conversations. We're seeing them hurt themselves. We're seeing them kill moms, relatives, open fire on school campuses after getting advice and consultation from ChatGPT. This is wrong. It's dangerous. I've seen those movies where robots take over the world, and it does not work out for humanity. So we're going to lead. We're going to get out ahead of it, and we're going to hold them legally accountable.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes this AI stuff is just indistinguishable. It really freaks me out, when used in the wrong way. And again, you put all the intelligence that AI has, and you're telling me that they can't very easily detect, it's tricky, right? Because you're like, do I have free speech or not? Can I, who's watching me when I communicate? But there's got to be, there has to be some sort of trigger mechanism.
There has to be. I mean, the FSU shooting, there is so much evidence from his ChatGPT logs up to minutes before the shooting happened. He was asking ChatGPT, what's the busiest time on this campus? Where's the busiest place in this campus? The student union. He asked him what kind of gun to use, how to load it, what kind of ammo, just minutes before he committed the shooting. And they did catch him. He is facing trial, and ChatGPT logs and the AI, the use of AI is huge in this trial starting in October of this year.
Yeah, well, for instance, social media. I know someone who recently had cops show up to their house because somebody went online and was threatening to come to their business with a gun, and some mechanism allowed it to be flagged and sent to the proper authorities. And so there's just, when it's blatant, it's always a slippery slope, right? But that just seems like something you should be able to catch and at least stop communicating. Like, no, you know, like Siri, there are certain questions you'll ask Siri and she won't respond to it.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
All right. So the state of Florida, big issue, hurricanes, obviously. And apparently there's an issue with not enough youth wanting to get into the field of emergency management. So DeSantis is trying to change that. How?
Yeah. So he held his annual press conference on the first day of the hurricane season, which is June 1st. Mm. Announcing CORE, which would be the Coalition for Operational Readiness in Education. It basically creates a workforce pipeline for students to start qualifying and, you know, becoming educated in positions of emergency management, disaster management, for not just hurricanes, but hopefully train them so they can go to other states too and even have, you know, knowledge on how to handle earthquakes, yeah, or fires,
tornadoes,
or any of that.
You name it.
And it basically is also kind of putting a bunch of agencies together, state agencies, private sector businesses, and schools, so that they can strengthen that bond and education and just kind of fast track kids into a line of work that they're just not seeming to be very interested in right now, which, yeah, is, it's important.
And I think we've seen other states do this with like the medical field and nurses and stuff. And if they're seeing a shortage somewhere or a shortage coming down the pipeline, it's like trades, you know, what do we need kids to do in five, or where are we going to see a need in 5, 10, 15 years, and just get kids interested in those professions. So I think it's a great idea. Really quick before we let you go, an update on DeSantis's efforts to eliminate for most Floridians or dramatically reduce the property taxes.
Yeah, so the legislature did pass through the House and the Senate the initiative that we talked about last week, and it will be going to the ballots in November for Floridians to vote on. And we have to get 60% to pass it, but I really hope it goes through. I've already seen people online arguing against it, and I'm like, oh, here we go. And DeSantis did put out a calculator online where you can go in, type in your address, put in your folio number, and it'll tell you how much you can save. I would stand to save $3,800 a year.
Nice.
On my property taxes alone. So I will be voting yes, and I will be getting everybody I can to go.
There's
vote
no
yes
way people don't vote yes on that. Even if you're a renter, the rents, it'll help rents if you're, you know, well, I suppose it wouldn't be on somebody's rental property, for instance, but primary residence, who's voting no? Like, yes, I want to pay more property taxes. So we will, yeah, see what happens. But voters get to decide, as they should, frankly, as they should. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
How was that? No, nothing?
I'm like a dying cat. We're mating.
We have an evil cat in our neighborhood. I feel bad for it because it doesn't have an owner and people try to catch it in a cage because it's attacking other cats. And he kind of sounds like that. All right. We'll get to comments coming up next.
Sorry. Okay, I'll be back.
I have to pay bills really quick. While most investors are focused on AI, crypto, and tech, the real story right now, at least, is what's happening in energy because of what's happening in the Middle East. So you have to ask if your current advisor is underestimating the impact that energy can have on your portfolio. If you want to double check, get a second opinion, which I think is a great idea, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham of Bulwark Capital. He's always looking for opportunities to lower your risk, lower your cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. If you do one of his free portfolio reviews, he'll explain to you how every market is being driven by energy, the impact energy has on inflation, how that could potentially affect your retirement planning. So the big thing is, I go back to giving your retirement as much upside as possible. It's what we all want, so why not get a second opinion with our friend Zach Abraham? Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. You can also find him across all social media platforms. He's real fired up on X today, if you want to read it. He's always really fired up. Knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, comments. Matthew Cook, $5 Super Chat. Brandy, congrats on your Scott Pelley glasses story, making it on the Daily Wire. Ladies, may you find someone that loves you like Scott Pelley loves himself. And for the record, that's like Katie good. Couric, when I met her, so nice. She mm-hmm. And I know she's gone off the TDS deep end as well, but she was so nice. Also, who was on the NBC Evening News with Brian Williams?
Oh, yeah.
Very nice. So anyone I've ever met, so they're not all like that. And frankly, when I was on Fox 13, you know, the anchors I worked with, Bill Wixie and Liz DeWicke, they weren't divas. They weren't divas. Some days I was like, they don't feel like they're in it. They don't feel like they want to be here, but they weren't. I didn't find them to be divas at all.
So there's
I was probably
bit
the
of,
biggest diva on the morning news.
So I always defend the diva as a bad thing, or even an ego as a bad thing, because right. I really do think that people like you, like Scott Pelley, like all of these anchors yeah. that you're talking about, you have to have a certain sizable ego to put yourself out there the
confident.
Way they all do. You have to be confident. And so right. people take ego as a bad thing. But again, it's just confidence. And it's necessary to put yourself out there and do these jobs.
Yeah. So. Anybody who's like on camera, especially for a living, when everybody's yeah. judging your every yeah. move, everything, you want to look your best. Now, I think it's a little too far to be like, when you come back in, I'm going to take my glasses
so
off.
So that's just kind of silly.
That's
so
just weird. It's like pretending. Yes. On Sheriff Sanders going to a No Hate in Washington State fundraiser, was I too harsh on him?
No. It
does it break your
sad.
Heart?
Breaks
it my
does.
Heart.
And I just wish that at the same time in his comment where he says, oh, what? Like, if I can't listen, then whatever. And he's just there listening or whatever. Listen to us. Listen to what we're saying right, about this organization, and then look at them differently and see if you still feel the same way. Because I feel like they're twisting what they're about. They're falling for some of right. the lines that they're throwing at people. And listen to us too. Like yeah. you're not listening to us by not are listening to our explanation why it's not a good thing to be there.
100%. Paul R., how crazy is it in 2026 we're not only having to stand up for girls and women not having to compete against men and their right to even, we're having to stand up for the right to even speak out and defend their rights. Mm-hmm. It's bonkers. Wide Crack says, Wide Crack, why do you guys do this to me with these freaking names? No, Derek, that breaks my heart. Moon Goddess, let the liars lie. Your supporters know who you are. Thank you. SLK, don't get mad. They're afraid of you. Humies are here. We support you, ladies. Love that your voice is being heard. We ride at dawn. On the Attorney General posting a notification for signature gatherers, Jules said, I signed the petition yesterday. No doubt someone drove by and screamed something at the signature gatherer. Yeah, that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Where is Chuck? Somebody said Chuck's not in the chat sponsoring the boop, so Nancy's sponsoring it for him. Let's see. Big Princess. Notice she didn't answer the question about Spencer Pratt saying all the drug addicts will move to Seattle. Yeah.
She wasn't going to talk to him.
No.
She was talking to the audience. She made that very clear.
Yeah. Sherry says Wilson's living in a delusion. 100%. Shosho Windfeather. If privacy is a concern, turn off the tolling cameras as well, or the red light cameras, or any other camera that gets a person. Yeah, they don't. Well, but those cameras are making them money, you guys. That's different with a capital D.
Again, number one, she said they have conflicting priorities. Number one priority
is life.
For everyone yes. is public safety.
Yeah, and look, I do agree that not at any cost, right? Freedom is the freedom is number one.
Yes,
to me, freedom yes. is number one, and there are some public safety yeah. risk associated with living in a world and a country that values freedom. So there is a balance.
Right. I'm not saying China style.
Right. But there is a balance here. But she controls the balance because they control the cameras. Mm-hmm. So and let's just and also turn them on just for the World Cup then, and then revisit the issue after.
But also her conflicting priority is like stupid ICE and, you know, might get a hold of the video. Like, right. That's not a priority.
No. That makes literally no sense. All right. Did I miss any here? I don't know. Papa Woody allowing the drugs to be in a sanctuary city. I don't know what that means. All right. Sorry, I should have ended on one that I do know what it means.
I do love how she said that that sometimes homelessness leads to more drug use because you have money to do drugs, but right. not for your home.
Like, literally it doesn't make any sense. No sense.
You've spent your money on your drugs, so you end up homeless. That yeah. makes more sense, but whatever.
Outrageous. All right. We'll get to our closing. Thank you, Nicole. And reminder, we are going to be here tomorrow. It's going to be a special treat. Yeah, it's a Friday show. We'll see how many people show up for it. You're all required to be here. Attendance is mandatory. If you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. You might see me at one of their events speaking about housing policy. I think I'm going to schedule to speak at one coming up. RHAWA.org.
It's a little ways away.
Oh, okay. RHA, I like to plan ahead. RHAWA.org, although I was supposed to be at an event last night, totally forgot about it and got frantic. You know why? Because I didn't tell Nicole about it. And when I don't tell Nicole about something, I forget to go. RHAWA.
Weird week.
Let me start this over. RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. They can help you on an individual basis navigate the crazy world of trying to be a housing provider in the state of Washington. They also have some really important lawsuits that they're backing to protect private property rights. And they have events and advocacy all year long. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. So Chloe Cole is the famous detransitioner. She was supposed to be at the University of Washington for an event talking about, she's a girl who was convinced that she just needed to, you know, by the world, oh, you'd be happier as a boy, and went through all these horrible things, and then woke up and realized she was just being indoctrinated. She was going to come to an event at the University of Washington, but there were so many death threats, she had to postpone and has not rescheduled yet. But she did speak at a Senate hearing Wednesday before the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committees.
Transition your daughter or bury her. That's the lie my parents were told. And every parent of a trans-identified child I know was told the same thing. Instead of honoring my parents' instincts to keep me safe, the doctors put me on a chemical castration drug to stop my puberty, followed by massive doses of testosterone to induce a fake male puberty. And at 15, my breasts were taken from me. I had a double mastectomy while I was still developing. The surgeon confirmed with me that my breasts were perfectly healthy. I hadn't even had my first kiss or practiced driving before. How could they take away part of my womanhood before I was old enough to call myself one? The peace and self-acceptance that I was promised never came. I'm almost 22 years old now. I have no breasts because they were replaced with scars.
Every person in America needs to hear that story and take it to heart. That has been our closing sanity check. Again, a couple housekeeping reminders. We will be here tomorrow. We'll have a regular live show at noon to make up for being gone earlier this week. And coming up on Saturday, set your schedule now. I'm going to be hosting a signature gathering event for the initiative to repeal the unconstitutional income tax. It is going to be at the Pursuit Church in the parking lot in Snohomish, Washington, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday. So please, please join us. We need to not only get this thing across the finish line, which I do think they're going to, but we need to blow previous numbers out of the water to make it very clear that people are very upset that they would do such a thing and violate the state constitution. All right, thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. My spiel worked yesterday. I should have, you know what? Tomorrow I'm gonna model our tote bags. Remind me, it's Friday. I'm gonna model them and I'm gonna show you all the things you can put in them. Can you tell I'm trying to sell our tote bags?
You did well. You did well.
Because I wanna move on to other merch. But I got this stock, you know, I gotta sell it. And also, who doesn't want a nice tote bag with an American flag right. on one side, our logo on the other, and room for all your fun stuff in it?
Yeah.
Towel.
Really quick, Old what? Sub Sailor and Kirk Wilson just each gave us $20.
Wow. Thanks, guys.
For the Truth Sayer Fund.
Appreciate
just because.
You. Appreciate you guys. You're the best.
Cool.
All right, see you tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow, Friday at noon.